asking thy blessing on this session, that we may do all things to honor and glorify him and be a help and encouragement to thy people here at home and those on the mission field. We'll just give thee all the thanks in his worthy and precious name. Amen. We don't have the biggest seminar at the crowd here, but we have one of the good ones, I think, one of the important ones, not because of me, but because of what we're talking about, the ministry of the service organizations. The outline is in there. I'm not going to go over all of that because time wouldn't permit it. We want to be real worthwhile and concrete in our examples and talk. So we talk about the need in the beginnings. We'll just say that it wasn't long after the missionary movement got started and things were really going on that there was very definitely a need for some point of contact between missionaries on the field and the folks at home. Not only to help the missionaries, but to let the folks at home know what the missionaries are doing. And so there were some various groups started. Perhaps one of the earliest was Echoes of Service in England, where they were just printing letters that came from the mission field and information from the mission field to pass on to the people in the UK. There are many groups that exist now all over the world. There are more of them coming into being, and yet there is still a need for the service groups to help out. Initially, or early on, it wasn't too important, except perhaps for two reasons. One way, to bring the communications to the Lord's people at home, and the other way, to help the missionary by finding a way to get funds to them. It was a bit more convenient than just sticking it in the mail. But after World War I, the governments began to get a little more interested in missionaries. They began to be concerned about where they were and what was going on, and they wanted to know that the missionaries were responsible to somebody here in this country. And so there was a need for things like that. And our United States government is not too much on the requirements for missionaries, but many of the foreign governments are. Some of them, before they will let a missionary into the country or give them a residence permit or anything like that, want to know that they're not going to become a burden on that country, they're not going to become a social problem or anything like that. And so the missionary service organizations began to issue letters of guarantee to the governments, in which they say that so-and-so is a fully accredited missionary serving in association with the organization, and that the organization will be responsible for their maintenance while they're overseas, and also for the repatriation back to their home country, be it the United States or Canada, wherever it might be, in case of an emergency, in case anything developed and the missionary had to get out of the country, someone was there to stand by to be sure that they got them out of the country. And so that has been going on, and that is not a very active part of our participation with the missionaries, but many countries do require this. Some other countries require it when they're staying on, that it get renewed every year, every 2 years, to let them know that these people are still there. There are a few countries in Europe that are now saying, well, we'd like to know how much support they get every year. Well, as assemblies, we have a little problem with that. We can't tell them that we guarantee they're going to get $50,000 or $30,000 or $1 million next year. All we can say is that we'll maintain them while they're in the country and bring them home if necessary, and we can, if requested and insisted upon, so what the average the people have gotten in the last few years has been, then we go from there, and that seems to be working very well. Now, one of the things we want to impress upon you is the difference between a missionary society, a missionary board, and CML or MSC. Now, Bill Coffey's here from MSC to defend MSC if I say anything wrong about them, but we're happy to have him with us. But a missionary society operates entirely different. They control the missionary in most cases. They tell him where to go. They tell him when he can go on furlough. They tell him how long he has to stay overseas. They control the funds that go to them, and many of them take a certain percentage off the top to carry on their national activities here at home and things like that. And before a missionary can go to the field, he has to be accepted by the organization. And then when the organization accepts him, well, they have a lot of rules that they want him to agree to, and one of which in many cases is that they have so much money pledged before they go overseas. Hey, we are surprised at how many of our young missionaries coming out, I suppose it's what they run into in their college careers, or they run into InterVarsity and other groups like that, and they learn about all these groups that they think this is the way of the world. So not unusual to get a letter these days, I want to go to the mission field. What do I have to do to be under CMML? Well, the first thing we write and tell them is nobody's under CMML. We are not a controlling organization. We are a service organization. Echoes of Service, Australian Missionary Tidings, New Zealand Treasury, MSC Canada, Lord's Work Trust in England, and all on around the world we could go, are all service groups. Our aim is to serve the missionary. We tell them when we have our conference for missionaries, if there's anything you think we can do for you, why, try us. We don't promise to do it, because some will ask you for some strange things, but we'll try to do whatever we can for you. And it's been working out very well, and we trust that we continue to be a help to the missionaries. When a missionary goes out to the field, there's a lot he needs to know. And there should be correspondence with other missionaries on the field before he goes. This is one of the things that we encourage, is that there be some contact between the folks at home and the missionaries on the field before the missionary goes overseas, that we know and they know what's going on, so that there is no conflict of interest when they get over there, and no disappointment in what they find and things like that. But we try to service the missionaries and the local assemblies in so many ways. And we like to serve individuals as well. Now, we also serve by the various ministries we carry on. We have a ministry of information, and that's getting news out to you folks and other people around, and we do this with our magazine that comes out 11 times a year. The summer have a combined issue. We have a combined June-July issue, or July-August issue. When you go down under, they have a combined December-January issue. Well, that's their vacation time. But we do have this magazine, and if you don't get it, you'd like to get it, well, you just have to give us your name and address. There is no charge for it. We consider it as one of our services, just as anything else. And it also enables us to get a good rate with the postal department for mailing it out. So very happy to give that or send that to anyone that wants it. You got a copy of it in your material yesterday, and we'd be pleased to take any new names that come along. If anybody in your assembly that wants it, I'd be happy to hear from them as well. And the printing of the magazine is all done in the United States, and we used to do the mailing, but facilities have changed in the Canadian Post Office, so that it's now a little cheaper to mail it from Canada to Canada and quicker than from the United States to Canada. But for years, it was much more reasonable to mail the magazine from New Jersey to any place in Canada than it was to mail it out of Toronto to Canada. But that's been changed, and MSC is now mailing the magazine themselves. They are drop shipped rather quickly from the printer in New Jersey up into Canada, and they are mailed out from there. And so any Canadian magazine mailing request should go to MSC Canada, and they will take care of that for you. And then we have the prayer handbook. You got one of those for the year 2000. It just arrived here at 11 o'clock yesterday, so you got them hot off the presses. And they have as accurate as a list that we could have about the 10th of December, I think the last correction went out there, to bring the people up to date. A lot of things change in that handbook. Every day there's changes. We have the people with emails. And you know, they send us an email today, and this is my new email number, and tomorrow they'll say, we've changed our vendor, and here's another email. And so you just don't know what to do to keep these email addresses up to date. But we try to keep the information up to date and current. We try to get articles in the magazine that let you know what's going on in the mission field, and to challenge your hearts to pray for the missionaries and to help them in their work. And then we have visual aids. We have an excellent video on commendation that takes about an hour and can do in two sittings. It was produced out at Greenwood Hill some years ago when we had a good group of missionaries there, and we have some very fine missionaries that speak to the subject of what's involved in commending somebody to the work of the Lord. What kind of background should this person have? What should they know about the mission field? What preparation should they go through? And there's nothing that says that they have to have a college degree or so much of this training or that training. They have to know they're called of the Lord. That's the main thing. But then these other things are things that people should notice working with the individual in the local assembly. How responsible are they? How accountable are they? How good are they administering the word? How active are they in the local assembly? There are some people that want to go to the mission field that have never even been involved in evangelistic work at home. Don't even go to an evangelism meeting. But if you can't evangelize and witness at home, you can't do it overseas. So it's got to start at home. So this film on commendation is very excellent. Now, that's available on loan. You may borrow it, just send it back to us when you're through with it, or you can purchase it. The price is still $28 if it's in the United States and $35 in Canada, and it's a very fine video, and only once has the video been returned to us that's been borrowed. The people have always bought it. They like it, they keep it, because it's a very fine piece. It's J.B. Nicholson Sr. is the narrator, and we have such men as T. Ernest Wilson and John Sims and on and on we could go. I can't think of all those old-time names. People that you know and respect, as well as some younger missionaries, and it's a great thing to have. And then we have area conferences. We will have a conference wherever we're invited. If people want us to, we will help with it. We will try to bring missionaries and good speakers to the conference, and all we ask the local assembly to do is to provide for the accommodation for the speakers and their entertainment, and to provide the place to meet and provide a luncheon. We usually have these on a Saturday, like from 10 o'clock to 4 o'clock, and they're very worthwhile and very helpful to people in getting them to know what's going on around the world at that time. And then we have missionary orientation program. This is something that has all been going on 4 or 5 years now, where those that are interested in going to the missionary field, if they feel they have an exercise, and if the elders in their assembly feel that these people are qualified and might have a good reason for going to the mission field, and will so state why they're invited to this conference, missionary orientation program, that's held in June each year at the same time as the conference for missionaries. And Patrick Long and Ronald Harris, Ken Fleming, Floyd Schneider are the basic instructors in that, and they do a very fine job of preparing the people there, whether they're young or whether they're old, to let them know what goes on in the mission field and to let them get acquainted with some of the things that go on. We have had instances of people coming to this conference that felt they were going to go to the mission field right away and wrote back later and say they've decided after what they learned they've got to think about it and do a little more preparation. And then we've had people come that were just slightly interested and they went away from that place very enthused and have gone off to the mission field. Now this past year we had a good group of 25 out there. That's our limit. We had 25 this time. Any bigger than that you really can't work with them. And within a very few months, over half of them were on their way overseas. There's a lot of them in the new missionary handbook that have gone overseas. And the training they get there is a great help to them. Talks about educating your children on the mission field. Talks about getting along with other people on the mission field. It talks about homeschooling children and all that's involved in that. And all those things that go on that are so very important to the missionaries. Just a general training for them. The Conference for Missionaries is held at that same time. It's just the missionaries coming together and trading experiences, sitting under the sound of some good ministry and getting some very practical training. The longest course we have down here for the United States people are 3 morning sessions on income tax. Do you know there are people that think if I'm a missionary I don't have to pay taxes? You'd be surprised how many people think that. They don't even think they have to file a return. Well, Jerry Keller from St. Louis comes out, and he's a lawyer and an accountant, and he has a very fine course that he gives for 3 mornings, an hour each morning, on the income tax. And it's not the income tax that bothers the missionary or concerns him as much as it is the self-employment tax. If they are overseas a certain number of days and they qualify as a non-resident of the country, their tax exemption is pretty high. It's high enough that none of our assembly missionaries have to pay income tax. But they do have to pay self-employment tax, which is the equivalent of Social Security. And he explains that to them and how they have to keep the records of what they pay that tax on. Now, if you take a fellow like Bob Watt, when he was in the pharmacy in Neenkunde, he certainly didn't have to pay self-employment tax on all the funds he got, because a great portion of that went to buy medicines for the pharmacy and equipment. But you have to pay tax on that portion that you use for yourselves, just like anybody here at home. And so that's a good thing to know. Of course, Canada, they don't have all those problems, do they, Bill?
Just worse ones.
Just worse ones, okay. But at any rate, while the Americans are having an accession, the Canadians are off having a session. All on income tax. And then one of the things we talk about a lot out there is the greatest problem on the mission field, and that's interpersonal relationships. How to get along with each other. What do you do when you're a young nurse, let's say, you just got your, whatever you call it, you've just become a registered nurse, and you go overseas, you're going to work in a hospital, and the senior nurse in charge of that hospital has been there about 20 years, and she's not up on modern medicine and all that. It's pretty hard to keep yourselves working together. But it's a very helpful time that they talk about not giving any answers, but just saying, giving them specific situations, letting them discuss about it and how they would react and see what the possibilities for getting along are. It's very important when you've got a mixed group on the mission field that they get along together. Very, very important. Very hard to be alone on a mission field. But when you get more people with you, you got to learn to get along with them. And everybody thinks that they're the best and they should be in control, but you got to leave the Lord to be in control and seek Him for your guidance and for your wisdom. Now, one of the things they said about this enterprise, this seminar, was how does CMML operate? How is it funded and all of that? Well, CMML has a group of directors. Most of them are not paid. Two that are working at the office do get some remuneration. But the rest of the directors serve without salary. And we meet once a month and have a real discussion on problems on the mission field and things that have been brought before us and what we can do to further the work and plans for future conferences and things like that. And then we have a group that meets every week, part of our business committee and the executives, to go over the distribution of funds and the situations that come before us. We have directors and officers, and MSC has a board of directors as well. And we function through committees. We have a MEAF committee, and we'll talk about that in a bit. We have a business committee and a conference committee and a publications committee and all these committees. And, you know, when you've only got 15 or 16 fellows, you find the same people on the same committees. But they all work together with different hats, and things work out well. Our office staff is relatively small. Our payroll, without taking into account the people that look after the building, is just about 7 people on salaries. The rest are part-time volunteers and full-time volunteers and all of that, and we're very thankful for all the help we get. It might be nice to have more, but it would raise the expenses and would also make things a lot easier in the office if you have people coming in every day instead of, well, this, as my daughter sitting over here, she comes in on Wednesdays and somebody else comes in on Tuesdays, and Cindy Colson comes in Monday and Tuesday, and then we have a part-time girl on a computer that comes in Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, but she does a great amount of work, and so we're thankful for that. So we function through that. And all the costs are met from the funds that are sent to us. We never ask for money. We never advertise a need for money. We're even a little bit reluctant to put in a magazine or a letter that we thank you when you do remember our expenses, because it helps us. But the Lord provides. But it's just like a missionary in the mission field. If he gets more money, he'll do more. He can do more. If John Berger gets more money, look how many. I have to talk about John Berger. John Berger, when he went to the mission field, he didn't know how he was going to get to stay in Turkey. This is a few years back. And he got into this prosthesis training, and he got very skilled in it and doing very well. Along comes this earthquake, and they have the greatest opening to present the gospel to those people in Turkey they ever had. The Lord knew in advance and prepared them. We've got to be thankful for things like that. But that's the way it goes. So we're thankful for all the gifts that we get, but we do not take any deduction for expenses. If you send us $1,000 or $1,000,000, we'll do with that whatever you tell us to do. We will not take anything for our expenses unless you tell us to. If you tell us to send it to a missionary that is no longer on the field, or his accommodations withdrawn, or something else has happened, we write back to you and tell you about that and ask you for new instructions as to how to use the funds. We only distribute the funds in the way you suggest. If you leave it to our discretion, we do have this meeting once a week when those funds are distributed to the missionaries as we see the need. And every letter that comes into the office is copied and given, a copy given to every director, so that they all know what's going on and they can read them. And when we get together to talk about needs and to talk about activities, well, we all have the latest information from the missionaries. Now, you have to have a bit of a trained ear, a trained eye, so you know that the ones that are always asking for money and probably don't need it, and the ones that never ask for money and really do need it, but you try to know what they're doing and look to the Lord for wisdom in the distribution of these funds. But we do that. We get along very well with that, and we're very thankful for it. We have a few suggestions for people. I don't know whether I should try, I'll try to get this in, that we should do about this, and that is that when you send us a gift, please send us a little more than just a check or a piece of post-it note. You'd be surprised. You know those little self-sticking things? Somebody will put that on a check and say, give this to Hawkins, or give this to some other name that we have a lot of them on there. And we got, let's say, a Wilson or something like that. Or Youngs. That's the name I was trying to think. All the Youngs that we have on the record. So think about them. And that's all that's on that slip. Well, it's a lot of things wrong. When we send that check of yours to the bank, what do we have in our files? Nothing. If the check bounced, if you write back and ask, did we ever get it, we would have no record of it. So if we don't get something else from you, we have to stop and take a picture of the check. Now, when I was a young fellow in the bank, we had a little crazy little machine that used Clorox or something to make copies, and it just burned through the paper. You could stick those things in and get a picture in a hurry. Even little checks would fly through. And then they went to microfilm, and now with these copying machines, they're great, but they take time when you're trying to process the work to get a picture of that check. So we ask that when you send a check, you send a note with it telling us who you want it to go to and give the whole name. Don't just say the Hawkins, or don't just say the Youngs. And don't just say the Youngs in Albania, because there's three, not the Youngs in, that's all right, but the Youngs in Zambia, that's where we have a problem. We've got three or four more there. We have to try to remember who these people are. So if you'll be specific about it, and then also tell us who the gift is from. Is the gift from John and Mary Brown, or is it just from John Brown? And why we have difficulty with this is, and sometimes we get complaints. We had one last week. The man called up and said, we sent you a gift, and you sent it out in my wife's name, and so people want to know if I died. Well, it's very easy to explain it to him. The gift didn't say that it was from both of you, and her name was on the check. But you know, these days, when a man's wife dies, or the husband dies, they leave the two names on the check. We've had the other experience come in. Somebody wrote, oh, this is maybe 2 years ago before we changed our policy, and said, did he marry again? His wife had been dead for 2 years, but her name was still on the check, and we sent the check out and sent the gift out in both their names. So he'd appreciate it if you signed it. If it's from both husband and wife, why sign it, John and Mary, whatever you want to, but tell us what to do, and we will do the best that we can. We get into problems like that when we misinterpret it, and sometimes we make a mistake and we do give it to the wrong person anyway. We have double checks and triple checks on who it goes to, but it can be a mistake. But if you write and tell us about it, we will make that up to you, to the people in your name, and count the other as a miscellaneous distribution. But if you'd send us something that we can put in a file that's got your name and address on the paper. It's nice on the envelope, but you'll come to the office, you'll see the girls, the ladies, clipping out the return address on the envelope and scotch taping on the piece of paper so we know where it came from. So it's we don't want to send out forms, because we have people that if we sent them a form, we would never hear from them again. That's fund solicitation. And we don't want to be guilty of fund solicitation. So do your best to send us complete information and tell us who they're from. Now, I could also tell you a little bit about some of the special funds that we have. We have a Missionary Education Assistance Fund, and Canada contributes to this as well. This was established by Voices from the Vineyard and Workers Together some years ago. This is a fund that seeks to help missionary parents with the education of their children through high school, not through college. You can't touch that. We don't even do a tremendous job of covering it through high school, but it is a terrific help, whether they're homeschooled, whether they are going to a private school or a public school or whatever it might be. We seek to help the parents. Freddie Barno, our secretary, is the head of that committee, and he sends out notices every year to the people to give them the anticipated cost for the education of their children. And when he gets it back, he correlates them and sits down and works out a plan and then brings it before the board of directors for approval. And we distribute that twice a year. Twice a year we distribute what we have, or what we as much as we possibly can. And the Canadian and American missionaries all participate in that, and Canada also shares in contributing to the fund. Then we have a WARM fund, and that's Widows and Retired Missionaries. And we distribute that fund, and some of the retired missionaries write back and say, whatever the WARM fund is, we appreciate it. We just made that name. We used to have a Widows Fund and a Retired Missionary Fund. We now have a Widow and Retired Missionaries Fund, and we distribute funds to them. We have an emergency fund, and this is one that was established because of problems overseas with government and everything else, and military actions are going on. That's a sizable reserve fund that's set aside to provide for the evacuation of the missionaries if it ever became necessary. if something went wrong in Zambia and we had to get all the American and Canadian British missionaries down to Zambia, it would take a few dollars to hire the airplanes to get them out. So we have that emergency fund earning interest, but it's sitting there ready to be used. And if it ever does get used, our policy has been that we look to the commending assembly to reimburse it for what has been used when, as, and if they are able. Now, it's a long time since we used that fund. We can be thankful for that. The last time we used it was in a case of Lois Logan, was very sick. It had to get to South Africa, and she needed emergency surgery. And they made the arrangements with the hospital in South Africa, and then they got a hold of the people that flew the medical airplane, but they would not take off until they knew they had $1,200. Mercy or no mercy, they weren't taking off till they knew that. Well, they called from Zambia to CMML on a Friday night in December when we were there having our Christmas get-together for the directors and the staff, and the power went out. We had a little snowstorm, the power went out, no telephone, no light, and they were trying to get a hold of us, and they couldn't do it. But thankfully, one of them thought to call Echoes of Service in England. And they got a hold of Echoes of Service, and because of the good relationships between the committees, they said, sure, we'll guarantee it. And then they called us 2 days later, and we made it up. But because of that, we were able to get her off the ground in Zambia and down in South Africa. And Lois is alive and well today because of that prompt activity. So it's good to have that fund sitting there. And there are some assemblies, when that was first being started, if the assembly made a contribution to it, we have a record of it. And if it's for their missionary from their assembly, it has to be used. They already have a credit balance there. But we're not adding to that fund at the time. We're just letting it sit there. Then we have a disaster fund. That's to take care of natural disasters, earthquakes, floods, tornadoes, and the like. And we used to just send out the money when we got it in. But a good 20 years ago or so, we decided it would be better to have the money on hand and send it out. And we had a good example of this with Jim Cochran down there in the Dominican Republic. Right after we decided to do this, they had a very bad hurricane came through. And he called and he said to me, do you think you can get me some money pretty soon? Because the black market's beginning to set in. Well, we were able to make a phone call to the bank, and he hoped, thankfully, had a banking account there, and we made the transfer, and he had the money that day, and he was out, and he was buying the corrugated tin and what he needed, and he got it at a very good price. And then the Lord's people sent in money that replaced that, so you have one disaster after another. But boy, we've been having the disasters lately, one right after the other. And also recently, we had to go into another area of disaster relief, and that's man-made disasters, and that's that situation in Kosovo with all the folks that had to get down to Albania. Never had anything like that, but we got a lot of funds in for it, and we're thankful that we had it. And so we have that relief fund, as we call it. We've sent some there, and we've sent some to other places where the problem hasn't been an earthquake or a tornado, but just some military mischief going on where the people really need help. It was a great help. It was a great outreach. A lot was accomplished in Albania with those people that were over there, with George Sturm and Ron Young and the other fella. Okay, you see him getting old. I can't think of his name, but the three of them. At any rate, they did a great job, and we're very happy that we could do that. Then there are other funds that we have around, and a little later on we'll give you a brochure that just lists them. We have a Bible distribution fund. Actually, we have two Bible distribution funds. We have a few people that say we want Bibles, to give away Bibles, we want to give them away absolutely free. We don't want anybody selling them, not even getting a nickel for them. And there are missionaries, and rightly so, that feel that they have to get something for the Bible. If you just give it to them, it's for nothing, they throw it away. So they may get a few pennies or whatever. So we have two funds. One where the gifts are restricted to the free distribution of the Bible, and the other where the missionary is at liberty to give it away or sell it for a few pennies or anything like that, whichever he feels is necessary. And that also helps, too. We get funds like that for translation work that comes along where they're involved in getting translations updated. You know, the languages around the world are forever changing, and a version of the Bible that was printed 20 years ago has to be updated to the modern language for the people. And that's not to say to put it in modern English, as we call it, or slang. It's just that the words change, and they have to do that. So we're thankful for that as well. And I want to leave time for questions. Suppose I stop now. I got a few other things to say, but let's, if anybody have any questions, and I hope you do. Yes, ma'am.
Any kind of a disaster in this country, we cut back.
On occasion we have, when we know how, especially since... That used to be taken care of by the Chicago area, Stewards Ministries, Interest Ministries, and things like that. And we will do it. We have to be careful. We don't change our status with the government because we're basically an overseas operation, and that has a lot of benefits. But if we get it and we know where to send it, we will do it. And told us who to send it to. Terrible storms down in North Carolina and the Carolinas, and we're still sitting with some money that people have sent us because we can't find any Christians that say they need it or want to distribute it. So we're just holding it and asking people what to do with it. But we can. You see, though, we are, with the government, we are an overseas organization. When the Internal Revenue Service came in a few years ago and ordered this, we had a very fine gentleman, because he gave us a good ruling. That's what made him a fine gentleman. I don't know what he'd have been if he'd been in trouble, but he had a few things. One is that our money mostly went overseas, and we did not control it when it went overseas. So therefore, even though we had a sizable amount of money going overseas, we weren't able to be financing any revolutions or trying to overthrow any governments or anything like that. And that's the time they were having the trouble with the World Council of Churches and raising troubles in parts of the world. And so that was good for us. And the other thing is that we never send out a letter asking for money. Because if they do, when the IRS or any auditor comes in, he wants to make sure you use the money for what you asked it for. Well, he didn't have any problem with that, and all he had to do was look at our stationery budget, and he knew we weren't sending out a lot of letters all over the place looking for money. And that was a good thing, too. And the fact that the missionaries controlled the funds and we didn't ask for money was very helpful to us. But if we change our status and get involved with people here at home, gets too big, we'll have to go back to the government and see what they say. Now, that might change a lot of things. It might make us file a lot of forms. We do not now have to tell the government how much we give to the missionary. On our statement, it says when it goes to the missionary, for the missionary project under your direction. And that's not money for him personally. It's for his missionary project. They keep the records, and they file their self-employment tax forms with the government. If we were to control the money, why, we would have to tell the government how much we gave every missionary and all that. But that day is going to come because there's almost nothing that the government doesn't find out about. In fact, Jerry Keller has told us that there's things in the fire that within a few years, if we issue you a receipt, we're going to have to tell the United States government at the end of the year, for just like the bank tells you when they give you interest on your bank account, they sell your form, send you how much interest you made, we're going to have to tell the government that we gave you receipts for tax deductible contributions and such an amount. But I hope that doesn't come for a long time. But, yes, sir?
To get information out, are you using the internet? Oh, yes.
We are not getting too much into the internet. We have people disagree with us. A lot of people do, but you don't put anything on the internet, you wouldn't put on an outdoor advertising board. The world knows it. So we're very careful what we're going to do about that. Now, Canada has the whole thing out there.
We have a web page. If you want to know the address of the web page, I'll give it to you online. Everything about MSC and the rest of the fishery are all on the web page. It's updated recently. And if it's a disaster, like you've had in Venezuela in the last few days, that will be on the web page. So you can get everything you want there. We are given every member of the board check the letters that come in on the internet as they come in. But it's a letter that comes from Zambia today on the internet with a channel to each one of us within minutes. We get it automatically and soon it's on. That means every letter, I may get 40 letters in one day. But we are, yes, using the internet considerably. Not for, as yet, by any means, sending out one or receiving one. For information, yes.
Information.
And it's a fairly wide branch of information that's on the web page right now. It's a list of all the missionaries, where they are, in some cases what they're doing, and that's being expanded all the time. You saw the Patrick Long is here at the moment. Patrick's got most of that people on the other line, and they're having a package together today.
That was all about, just for the benefit of the tape, that was discussion about MSC and the information they have on the Internet. We have to be very careful because so many things you don't put in print and yet people put them out on the Internet. We have this other areas. The other day, an email came through and everybody that's in a certain area of the world, their names are all on that. Not their addresses, but the names are all on that, and that could be very, very bad. There are people sitting, searching that Internet, just looking for things. A lot of them are just looking how to make money, but there's certain, within bounds, it's fine.
All we have is
That's a lot of addresses on the Internet. That is something that we're not fully in agreement with as yet.
It does the same thing
up here.
Those that are in questionable areas.
Mm-hmm.
Your addresses are not given.
Yes, sir.
John, sometime back I recall that you had services for when missionaries come back, the clothing, the temporary place to stay. Do you still do that?
Very good. That was a question about the clothing center and the missionary home. I should have mentioned that earlier. I went right over that. When Fields, Voices, CML Limited, and the Julia Hassie Missionary Home all got together, four different organizations, and joined forces back in 1971, we wanted to get out of New York City. Voices and Fields were both in there, and well, CML Limited was just a group that met. They were representatives from all over the country. And the Julia Hassie Missionary Home was in Union City, a very lovely home, high on the top of a cliff, but they built the third tube in the Lincoln Tunnel, and right at the top of the hill was a missionary home, and they got more fumes than you could get in a refinery, and they wanted to get out of there so that people could breathe fresh air. Well, in the goodness of the Lord, we were able to find a place, and you have a book in that pamphlet that we gave you that has a picture of it right on the inside. You see this picture, the Ministry of CML, which has a lot in it, shows you the missionary home. Now, there's 50 rooms in that, but they're not all rooms that people can stay in. But we can accommodate quite a few missionaries down there. And that's available when they're coming home on furlough and need a place to stop and rest up and adjust. Or on their way back, they got to repack and get together. Or if they're home on furlough and they're having meetings in the area and they're going to be in our area, they can come and they can stay there. And insofar as it's possible, while they're resident at the home, they can have a vehicle to drive. They have to be resident at the home. Our insurance company will cover them if they're resident at the home. They can't be living in Philadelphia or anything like that and using one of our cars, and they can't take it on a cross-country trip anymore. But if it's needed for their ministry in the area. The other thing is, up to 10 years ago, let's say, we used to get a lot of cars given to us because the tax deduction was just as good as the trade-in value, maybe better. People today, at the price of cars, they run them into the ground, and you really don't want them when they come like that. They're not feasible. You don't want to give a missionary something that's going to fall apart and send them out on the road. But we do have about 6 cars still that are available, and we do have a clothing center, a good-sized clothing center. And missionaries are welcome to come there and help themselves. There's no charge for it. Whatever's there, they can help themselves to. We do have some restrictions that you can't have one man come in, and if he's a size 16 shirt, we got 6. He can't take 6 of them and leave none for the next fella. So we got to try to watch that and do that. But there's a good bit of clothing there. Many people send us good used clothing, and some people send us not such good used clothing, and that just gets to be a problem of disposing of it. Our slogan is, if you're going to send anything to the clothing center, don't send it if you wouldn't wear it yourself. If it's all worn out and stained, there's no point in sending it to us. We want to give the missionary the best we can. And then there are ladies' groups around the country that have get-togethers and showers and different things for the clothing center, like the lingerie for the ladies and stockings and stuff, and the underwear for the men. They're never secondhand. That's always new stuff. But some people, they have outlets in the areas, and they'll send it to us, and we're very thankful for that. So it's a big help. It's an exceptional help to the folks coming from Africa in December. We can meet them at the airport with an overcoat. Even if it doesn't fit them, it'll keep them warm till we get them down there and find another one. But that's a great service, and it's a big service. But we do have that possibility that they can stay there and they can come for the clothing center. And if there's a home worker passing through the air and he stops in the clothing center, he can take a limited amount too. But it's basically for the people coming and going, they can't get it. And we also have a rule that if the person isn't there that's going to wear it, they can't take it, because it just becomes a waste. They'll take two pairs of shoes and they get them to somebody and they don't fit, so they throw them away. They don't come back to the clothing center. So if you're not there to try it on, you can't take it. This is not true of a mother and children. She knows what size her kids wear, but generally speaking. But that's very good. Any other questions? Yes, sir. Where is the clothing center? Well, it's in Wall Township, New Jersey. Our address is Spring Lake. That's the bigger town close by on the highway. But Wall Township is in Monmouth County, New Jersey. Exit 98 on the Garden State Parkway, not far from there, but it's there. Sir.
How do you inform the missionaries of what money from the town for them?
Could you repeat that? This next door broadcast will get a little too loud.
Whenever that sent some funds somewhere in Brazil, how would you tell them that the funds had come in for them? How do you communicate that to them?
That's how do we tell somebody he sends in a gift to somebody in Brazil? How do they know about it? Well, when your funds come into us, they're processed as much as we can on a daily basis, and we issue you a receipt. It's got your name and your address on it, and there's a breakdown, shows how much is for missionaries, how much is for expense, how much is for other items. Now, the other items are the disaster fund, the emergency fund, the warm fund, and things like that. The middle one that's empty most times is our expense account, and the first one's the missionary. And then down underneath is listed the breakdown. Now, those are all combined onto the missionary's account, and we have in our magazine every month a list of the cutoff dates for the next 3 months. When that cutoff date arrives, we stop processing until we've remitted that month's funds. And the missionary gets a statement which lists his name and his account number at the top. And underneath that, in day order, are the gifts he got in along your receipt number shows there. That's for our control purposes. The date, the name and the address and the amount of the gift. And then that's extended. And at the end, he's got a total. And the last thing says what we did with his money. Most cases, it's deposited in a bank in this country.
So you physically mail him a statement once a month?
Once a month we mail the statement. Now, that doesn't say you're going to get your answers once a month. If you send mail to South America, I guess is about the slowest there is now. Some folks are still looking for stuff 2 and 3 months that haven't got back. And then somebody just the other day wrote in wondering about a gift to one of these fellows in Turkey, Tom Aiken. Well, Tom just got back there after the earthquake hit, and I'm sure he hasn't had time to turn around, but somebody's complaining they didn't get a response for last month's gift. Well, I just wrote and asked him to be patient and told him a little bit about Tom, and he'll probably hear from him shortly. But that they are notified that way.
And you ever thought about emailing them things like that?
Or? Email?
Yeah.
Names and addresses on email? No, sir.
No.
No, sir. No, no more than we... Go ahead.
Not financial amount?
No.
Not secure.
Not secure. The same thing. I, for one, don't have my address on my check. A lot of missionaries don't have their address on the check. Don't put your address. I hear this on TV now, and I've been preaching it for 20 years. Don't put your address, don't put your telephone number and your social security number on your check. You're giving it out to the world, to all the crooks that are looking all over the place. And they're collecting it, and then you'll be getting phony charges. You've got to be... This Internet is great. For the good people, it's also great for some of the bad people.
Have you thought, well, I need to ask you a question. My nephew is to go to college. They can go online and put in the code, and they can get their grade on the computer. Would there be, I mean, that's pretty secure because they've got their own code.
You can say it's secure all you want to, but anybody will tell you that you can find out anything out there, no matter how secure it is.
It may be secure here in North America, and very often is. But why may it be secure in Zambia? Why even sending funds or anything to Zambia on the internet? And it's probably a little difficult. So the missionary there is a big problem, too. Because I'm only saying one country. Zambia, so I'm here. We pay a monthly fee, or maybe even nothing at all. That's fair. In Zambia, they pay 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes even 5 seconds.
Right.
For what they take off the internet or the yet. So they don't want to send you long letters for that graduation, which is another story itself. Because it costs them a bunch of money just to receive people. Apart from the danger of the connecting with the email service out there. And then there's only one time, you've got to apply to the other $5 South America.
They were paying in Zambia a little while ago as much for 1 hour as more than you're paying for a month here. They're paying $30 an hour just to get their email.
Well,
So much so they only went on the air once a week. And even that got destroyed, too.
I've got one more question, and you might just know better. So about what percent of the money you take in would you say, for example, if we send in from our chapel $1,000, what would be maybe a suitable percentage for office if it would be the rate of the distribution of that money?
Well, we say 10%, but actually our expenses, and we don't do any great cost studies, are 8% of what we take in. So there's so many you hear nothing from. If we get 10%, it more than covers us. And like a missionary, the more you get, the more you can do. We don't want to set any grounds. If an assembly hasn't got it, missionary needs it, send it to the missionary. The Lord will provide for us. We're not campaigning for funds, but you ask the question, that's the answer.
Are there
any Indians here? We think that, actually, I've been trying for about 20 years, under 5%. They don't have a missionary home. They don't have automobiles. You get what you pay for.
One
other thing, what we do is,
we likewise, don't
go to
any funding, but we do take from legacy 5%.
Yeah. We do get legacies, too, in which, no, not in a legacy. Some people want to know if they leave CMML money, can they tell them who it's to go to? And the answer is no, not if you're going to get a tax deduction for it. You have to make it to the organization. Well, every gift you give, you're giving to us. The fact that we do what you want is incidental. But if someone wants to leave us a legacy and wants to make suggestions how to use it, we tell them, write us a letter, and we put in our pending legacy file. The only thing we ask is that you don't tie our hands. Don't say it must be distributed to these 10 missionaries, and then you outlive those 10 missionaries. Then what do you do with the money? Yes, sir.
When you're in your statement, monthly statement, you mention usually the letter the last line, distributed by CMML.
Sometimes we have distributions by CMML, yes.
That is non-designated funds?
No. If they're undesignated, yeah, yes they are, but not in another way. If somebody sends us in something to allocate, we tell the missionary the name and address of who it came from. But we use a slash on the end because Uncle Sam says it's all allocated. You can't differentiate. So we have a little slash that means that it's allocated, but the donor didn't mention your name. And we do that to build up contact with newer missionaries and ones that we know have a real need. Now, we're thankful that there's, less than 10% of what we get is unallocated. Most of all of it's allocated. But we do get, when we have a legacy and we make some distributions, two or three times a year we'll make a kind of a general distribution, and we'll say in that distribution by CMML. And that's it as well. Yeah. Yes, sir.
If I read out of college and God provides a way for me to get into like full time work for say in the United States, say working in inner city or whatever, what is the equivalent to CMML?
Christian Workers Fund, run by out at Walterix. They're the ones that have picked up all the transmissions that Interest used to do, and they're very good, and they're very helpful. They don't have a home or anything like that, but they are an organization that will forward funds, and they're very good, too. Walterix Publishing, yeah. Any more questions? There's a few things came up there. I want to just pass out. I'll have my daughter do it. I gave them to her. A little book, a little trifold on other special funds information. Several people have been asking us about that. What are the other funds you have? They say we want to leave some money and make some suggestions. Tell us what other funds you have. So we have done that. And we have also, I'll mention too, at the request of a lot of people, we've gone into charitable trust funds and charitable annuities. So we are available if you're interested in having a charitable annuity, which avoid some probate and all of those things. Why, we can help you out with that. You want to get a tax deduction with anybody that has any money in the stock market and they've had it for a long time, they're worth a lot of money now, they want to make a good distribution. Ruth, over there. There's, when you give securities away, you get a tax deduction for the value of the day you give them, rather than if you sold them and then gave the money away, you'd have to pay the capital gains tax. by contributing the securities to the charitable organization, you get a deduction for the market value of the contribution. And let me tell you, that's one of the hectic things that's been going on the last few weeks at Uncle Sam's December 31st income tax. People, they call you one day, we're going to give you some stock, what's your broker's name, etc. And then it never gets to the broker. That's because the market went down. The market goes up, they're back on the phone. So we have to keep waiting until we know the broker really has it before we do anything. But we're happy to help out with it. It's not a lot, because, but there are some very fine contributions we have received. Well, 3 minutes to 12. No more questions. Well, I hope you've benefited some by the rambling. But any questions you have privately, come and ask, and we'll try to do our best to answer them. And Bill will take care of it. Did I cause any problems, Mr. Coffey, with MSC?
Not at all.
Good, okay. We do this at Greenwood Hills every year at the Conference for Missionaries. He talks for MSC, and I talk for CMML. All right. Thank you very much for coming. You can be on the front of the chow line, if there is one.